This episode of the Big Wedding Planning Podcast is sponsored by Susan's Travel Services.
Right now is the perfect time to start planning your destination wedding or honeymoon.
Susan Green and her experienced professional team are available to you to help plan your perfect day.
With over 25 years in the travel industry, Susan's Travel Services is committed to creating the destination wedding or honeymoon you have dreamed of and to ensure that your guests have a fantastic vacation too.
They can fulfill your destination wedding or honeymoon requests for any location in the world.
If you're looking for an all-inclusive experience, Susan's Travel has partnered with some of the best in the world, whether it's Mexico, the Caribbean, an exotic cruise, an overwater bungalow in the Maldives, Bora Bora, or the French Alps, Susan's Travel can help you.
Not sure of where, how, or how much? Schedule a free consultation to get you moving in the right direction.
Susan's Travel has exclusive offers for TBWPP listeners. Visit the website at susanstravelservices.com today for details. And be sure to mention that you heard about them on the Big Wedding Planning Podcast when you inquire.
The Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
Just two wedding planners tearing it up. Listen, learn,
land that way. Hello, hello, and welcome to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, a show for anyone involved in planning a wedding. We want you to learn something valuable and be entertained at the same time. My name is Michelle Martinez.
And I'm Christine Matthews. Hello, welcome. Thank you for joining us. Or I guess we're joining you. Wherever you are.
Yeah. Thanks for allowing us to join you. Whether you're in the car, you're on a run, a walk, washing dishes, doing laundry, in the shower, okay? Mm. We can't see ya, but hey, good for you. This is exciting. Thanks for bringing us along.
Hey, speaking of in the shower, just because we're multitaskers at heart.
Yep.
I'm a part of this like college Facebook group, whatever. It's mostly like reminiscing and funny college stories and stuff from when we graduated. But people are mentioning how they drink beers or wine. Like it's this like great pleasure to drink your beer or wine in the shower. Like nothing like a hot shower and a glass of wine. Like this is like a thing.
Uh-oh.
And there's like special wine glass holders
I've
and like beer
that.
Holders you can put in your shower. It's not a new thing necessarily, but I keep hearing about it. And I do love a very hot, long shower after a long day. Like that feels good to me. And I do love a glass of wine at the end of a long day. And I don't always have time to indulge in both.
Interesting.
So I think I'm gonna give it a shot.
You're gonna drink in
I'll
the shower.
Report back.
You're gonna drink in the shower now. Okay.
Yeah, I'm gonna make a conscious decision to drink in the shower.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll let you know how it goes.
Let me know. I mean, I feel like drinking in the bathtub makes sense because that's more of like a leisurely like me time.
Less shampoo droplets in your beverage. No, I'm with you. That's why I've not done this, but I feel like the universe is telling me to give it a shot.
I don't know. As long as
I feel like you would be concerned about dropping your beverage, right?
Well, no, I'm concerned about.
And then there's glass everywhere.
You know, I don't know. That seems like something someone who has a drinking problem might do.
See, I feel like it's for like the multitasking, like busy working mom, you know. I'm going to take your alcoholic idea about this and I'm going to shift it to busy mom who is not an alcoholic, but who might enjoy a cold beverage in her shower.
Busy mom who's hiding the alcohol from the children.
This has zero to do with today's episode. But
no, nothing at all. It's experiential. It's an experience.
Sure. Yeah, it's combining things you love in your life and deliberately crafting an experience.
You could say, "Hey, Lance, you want to have a drink? Sure, babe. All right, meet me in the shower." He'll be like, "What?"
Oh, yeah, that would be three things.
Yes.
Yeah.
Super multitasking. Okay, well, moving right along, that's all right. Can't wait to hear about that. Julie Comfort. You know, I just realized her last name is really fitting for this. Julie Comfort and I had a really great convo interview. She contacted us because she felt like what she's trying to do with her clients is something that really should be adapted by most. And I totally agree, because I think that designing a wedding is difficult for a lot of people. But I think when we're talking about design, everybody is focused on aesthetic design, using
with things. With objects, signage.
Right. And what Julie is saying is like, let's try to move away from that. I mean, it's awesome to have beautiful florals, and not that we shouldn't. But, you know, let's really focus on human connection, right? Because especially now during this pandemic, and that we are so limited in the amount of human connection we can have, and there are so many weddings not happening because we can't have live events, that when we do have them, this connection is insanely important, and it really should prioritize above all else. So I'm going to read Julie's bio while we let that sink in.
Mm-hmm.
As a destination wedding photographer for 10 years, Julie Comfort attended over 250 weddings in 15 countries across 5 continents, covering a staggering number of cultures, traditions, and venues, yet often feeling a huge missed potential for more personalization and connection. Ready for a new adventure, she moved to Berlin, that's correct, Berlin, Germany, in 2015 and studied experience design at Chaos Pilot? Oh my gosh, sorry guys, for those people who speak German, I so screwed that up, but you know what I mean. Where she immediately recognized that a holistic design approach focused on people, not things, was the missing ingredient for truly meaningful and magical weddings.
I love that.
Right? She founded Comfort Studio, an experience design consultancy dedicated to designing celebrations with intention, heart, and wild creativity. That intro of it in and of itself, her bio is just all the explanation for you need to know what this episode is about. It's so important. I hope you all take away some really great info from this. I know I did.
Yeah, it's a missed opportunity when you have all of the people that mean something to you for the most part in one place, or most of the people that mean something to you in one place.
Yeah.
I mean, magic can happen. And thinking about the best weddings that I've been to as a guest, like the ones where you are still in touch with some of the people that you met there. How awesome is that? It's what makes a wedding truly memorable. So let yourself be inspired by this episode. We're really happy to connect with Julie, and we dig all of this.
Very good. Oh, and stay tuned because Julie has a discount for you for our podcast listeners. All right, here we go. Our interview with Julie Comfort. Julie, welcome to the pod. Thank you for sharing what I think is going to be some really great, awesome tips today for people with regard to design.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. So first off, I think when you first reached out to us, I really liked this idea of experience design, right? And to design around people and, people and not things. Can you just kind of elaborate more on that?
Sure. Well, experience design is really a design practice based on the emotional journey of an individual or a group. And for some reason, the example that always comes to mind to kind of embody what experience design is the idea of a haunted house. That's an experience that's designed to make people feel fear. And, you know, there's a lot of details that go into that kind of thing. There's lighting and sound effects and obviously things, creepy things that jump out at you. And we can actually use the same techniques and the same principles for designing experiences to make you feel other things like warmth or love or feeling welcome or whatever it is that you want your guests to feel at your wedding. We can actually design the experience around trying to create those feelings.
I love that. I think we're a lot of couples, and you could probably clarify this for me, because I mean, as a wedding planner, I help my clients design their weddings. I don't call myself a designer, but I think I have a knack for it. So I do it. But I do have clients who will use a designer as well as me as their planner. And I love that because for me, it's fun. I'm like, ooh, what did they make? What did they create? You know, and I know that you do this as well. Like you work as the designer, then the couple, and then they have the planner and you work with a lot of planners, right?
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
When people come to you, when a couple comes to you, what do you, like, I think a lot of people have a hard time envisioning or really kind of just even determining like what even to do for design. What do you think is a lot of the blockage for couples?
Well, I think first of all, there are different types of design. And I think that the primary type of design that people think of when they think of weddings is the aesthetic design details, the flowers, the place settings, all of the decor, the color palette, all of that would fall under aesthetic design. And that's what most wedding designers deliver. And a lot of wedding planners do that as well, obviously. And I think the problem with that is, while all of those things are wonderful, I'm a huge fan of design. I mean, I love a beautiful stationary suite, and I love flowers, and even the food and all of those things, they come together to create this really beautiful aesthetic experience. But I think that by putting all of the focus on those details, we're kind of neglecting to really think about the emotional experience that people are having. And one thing that I always noticed about weddings, and something that I think a lot of couples take for granted, is that people think if you just design a really beautiful setting and then put all of the people that you love into this beautiful setting, that organically they're just going to come together and have a good time. But what ends up happening is connection doesn't happen automatically. Like, you kind of have to help people connect. What I've seen at a lot of weddings that I've been to as a guest, as a photographer, is that people tend to gravitate toward the people they already know. And if they don't know anyone, it can be really uncomfortable because there will be a lot of people there who know each other. And so experience design is just a way of creating moments and interactions and activities that can help the people come together on top of the aesthetic design. I mean, the two things I think go hand in hand in creating an overall experience. But I think most people neglect to really consider how the people are going to feel once they're in this beautiful space that you designed.
So give an example.
Okay. So for example, I always kind of start with how you want people to feel. And one way to do that is to think about how you don't want them to feel. So for example, if you have people coming, I think one of the most awkward moments at weddings is when you come to the table and you're seated with a bunch of people you don't know. And it's like walking into a dinner party. It kind of reminds me of middle school when you are walking into the cafeteria and, you know, you're trying to find a place to sit, and you sit down at this table and maybe you don't know anyone there. That can be a really uncomfortable feeling. So experience design would consider, okay, we don't want people to feel uncomfortable. How do we want them to feel? We want them to feel welcomed. We want them to feel a sense of belonging. How can we do that? So one example is to have a table host, to assign a table host at the at the table who welcomes people. They know who everyone is when they come. They would actually act as a host because one of the weird paradoxes about weddings is that the couple that's getting married, they're both the hosts of the event and also the guests of honor. Mm. And they can't really do both at the same time. And so weddings end up sort of being a party without a host in a way.
Wow, that is so true.
There's a coordinator that's sort of making sure everything happens smoothly, but there's no one there who's going to make introductions and, you know, make sure the conversation flows smoothly and things like that. So one thing I like to recommend to couples is you assign someone at each table to act as host. Maybe they welcome people as they arrive to the table, they pour wine, maybe they get the conversation going, maybe they have a little bit of information on everyone that can act as an icebreaker so that people aren't coming with nothing, because otherwise the conversation is just going to be, so how do you know the couple? And how do you know the couple? And then it pretty much ends there. It becomes this awkward small talk. I mean, I actually have a lot of ideas for ways to help people have conversations at the table. There can be conversation menus, things like that. But really the point is focusing on the people and the feelings. I mean, the table itself probably is going to look gorgeous, but that's not enough when you have, you know, 2 hours to spend now with this group of people that you just met.
Do you, I love this idea, by the way. I love this. And I can't even like what you just said just a few moments ago, that the couple, they're the hosts and they're the guests of honor, is so freaking true. And this is where it comes back to just reading your bio, like that you noticed that there was this kind of disconnect and a huge missed potential for connection, really, right? And this is goes back to, you know, I always say like the small weddings are my favorite because I know this is clicking for me now, right? Like, because I can see that my clients, that this couple, they're really able to connect with their guests because it's a smaller wedding.
Yes. And they can help guests connect with each other because they can be that bridge between people. They can say, oh, hey, so-and-so, have you met, you know, my cousin, you guys have this thing in common, and introduce people in the way that you would if you were hosting a party at your house. Mm. But for a wedding that has, you know, maybe 50 or more guests, it's really hard for the couple to be that bridge. And they really are the only thing connecting all of those people in that room is, you know, the couple that's getting married, and they can't really serve the role as hosts. So how can we help kind of fill that gap? And I think, you know, one way to do that is to ask people to help play host at the wedding. And I think sometimes couples are a little reluctant to put their guests to work, aside from maybe their closest friends who are in the bridal party, but actually, people like to be useful. They like to feel important and that they have a role to play. And it can be a real honor to be chosen as this person who is so friendly and outgoing that, you know, they've been given this responsibility to kind of help people connect with each other if the couple getting married can't be in that role.
Do you ask this of your guests in advance? I mean, do you have it kind of planned out and mapped out?
Yeah, I think that you would reach out to, you would think, okay, who would be a good person? And maybe you do the seating arrangement ahead of time. Mm-hmm. And then you would think, okay, who's someone at each table who would be really good for this? And then you reach out to them and you say like, hey, I have this, you know, this idea. Let me know what you think, if you would be interested in doing this, you know, and you would say to them, like, I chose you for this because you have such and such quality. You're, you know, really friendly and engaging and people like you. And I think, you know, for the most part, people are actually really touched to be chosen for that role in the same way that people are touched to be chosen as a bridesmaid or a groomsman. It's saying like, you're important to me. You're someone I trust. And it's an honor, and it gives them a sense of purpose at the wedding.
Oh, I love it. The planner in me is like, oh God, those seating assignments are such a pain in the ass. We got to get this early, got this done early. We got to get those RSVPs confirmed earlier. But I think it's worth it. I think that's worth it. I think it's such a such a beautiful thing. You know, there's many, I'm all on board for this experience-based and this personalization in this way. And I don't want to get caught up on this one idea. So we should probably just kind of continue talking about other things, and maybe other ideas will come up as we discuss. When you're designing, okay, so you're doing experiential design, right? But are you also helping with aesthetic design?
No, I don't do that part of it.
Okay.
Yeah, I just do experience design.
Interesting. Okay. So you mentioned, for example, the conversation starters or whatever, like you would include something like that at this table or give it to the table host or whatever to start conversations?
Yeah, there's also things like conversation menus. Like in the same way you would have a printed menu of what you're going to eat, it looks just like a menu, and you can put them on each play setting, and it's just conversation starters, questions that you can ask the table. I didn't invent this idea, but I think it's a really great thing to implement at weddings.
So when we talked on our onboarding call, you had mentioned that you work with a lot of intercultural clients and having to like merge those cultures and traditions. Can you elaborate on that?
Sure. I mean, I think that's another big thing that I noticed when I was going to a lot of weddings, is that a lot of people just kind of blindly follow traditions and rituals without really putting much thought or intention into them and really considering whether or not they fit them as a couple and their beliefs and values. And there are so many different traditions and rituals from different cultures that I think that couples can really be sort of shaping their own ceremony based on what makes the most sense to them and really throwing away anything that doesn't fit. And I think it's especially interesting when you have multicultural weddings. And actually, funny enough, most of the weddings that I've done where it was two cultures coming together, the wedding itself was also taking place in a third country that also had a third culture to kind of bring into the mix, because I mostly specialized in destination weddings. So for example, I did a Chinese and American wedding in Mexico. I did an Ethiopian wedding in Barbados. I did a Vietnamese wedding in Australia. And so I think there's so much opportunity to really kind of pick and choose from each culture how you want to incorporate that into creating a really unique wedding. Each of those things is so unique to those couples. There's just an opportunity to be really intentional about which pieces that each couple chooses to integrate into their wedding experience. And also there can be language barriers too. And it's also important to think about, okay, how are we going to treat the language issues? I actually was speaking to a planner not too long ago, and she had a bilingual wedding, and they made these little cards for each place setting that were kind of common phrases and greetings so that the different families could at least engage with each other a little bit. Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Yeah, exactly. And that's experience design. I mean, that's thinking about the experience of people who might not speak the same language as the other people who are there. How can we still create a feeling of connection and belonging?
Oh, I bet these weddings, these types of clients create all sorts of fun ways for you to design these experiences for them.
I think it's really important that we don't just treat our guests like an audience. I think in order for everyone there to have a sense of meaning and engagement, they actually have to feel like their presence is important and they play a role in some way. And I think I was thinking last night actually about a wedding that I had gone to a few years ago, and I traveled quite far to go to this wedding. And in the end, it kind of felt like it didn't really matter if I had been there or not. I didn't necessarily feel like I needed to be there. Like I didn't feel like my individual presence made any difference.
As a guest.
As a guest, yeah.
Huh.
And I think that that's something that we should really be considering when we're planning weddings, is how can we ensure that everyone there feels like their presence is integral to what's happening? And I think the ways to do that is we can give people roles and responsibilities, like I mentioned earlier, making people hosts, giving people something to do, and then also creating some kind of personalized activities or engagement where we really acknowledge how important it is for everyone to be there and how important the role is that they play in our lives. And there are different ways to do that. I mean, it can even be something like something put in the thank you note that you send after the wedding. I think when we write thank you notes, we're just thanking them for the gift that they gave us. Like, thanks for the blender, you know?
Yeah.
And I think instead of thanking them for giving us a gift, we should be thanking them for the role that they play in our lives and really acknowledging people, making them feel really acknowledged and important to us. And they should, they are important. They should be important and they should feel important.
Hmm. Yeah. I agree. I think, I'm curious, as you were speaking and you're talking about these experiences and engaging people, we often have listeners reach out to us and say, like, I'm not going to have dancing at my wedding. You know, what are some other ideas of things we can do? And our default is always like, well, you could do games, you know, a slideshow, you know, things like that, right? Because most of my clients, they have dancing. There's drinking, there's dancing, like that's, there's a big ass party. But something tells me that you would have some other really great ideas up your sleeve.
I mean, I'm a big fan of games, but I also think that you can treat it. It sort of depends, I guess, to the couple, what really is the most important thing. I went to one wedding one time and the couple, they were huge foodies and they really just wanted their wedding to be completely designed around the food. Mm. So essentially it was a dinner party. And I think the way to make a dinner party slightly more engaging than just having a bunch of people sitting around talking is there are ways to, I guess, engage people in activities and conversations. And certainly the conversation menu would be a great way to make the dinner more engaging, like really get people talking about things a little bit deeper than small talk. There's this great thing called 15 toasts that Priya Parker talks about in her book, The Art of Gathering, where everyone around the table has to give a toast on a certain topic and people get really intimate and they end up sharing really intimate things. And that creates a huge sense of connection among everyone there. One of my clients the other day, I was talking to them and we came up with an idea to create kind of a ritual with candles. And so we were talking about, you know, maybe there can be some moment where we all light a candle. And so at first we came up with the idea, okay, well, instead of having the candles on the table pre-lit, maybe everyone has a little book of matches on their plate. And everyone's asked to light the candle at the same time. And all of the light kind of happens at the same time. And then we came up with the idea to take it one step further and to actually have, so they were going to have they're planning on having one long continuous table, and to create almost like a timeline with the candles, so that one end of the table is when the couple was born and one end of the other end of the table is the present, and to go light a candle like at the year where you first met the bride or the groom. And that way each person is lighting up a part of that timeline of this couple's life. And it then when all of the lights are lit, like you really have this visual representation of like how all of these people in this room have touched some part of this couple's life from the time they were born until right now. And I mean, we haven't actually done this yet, but I think even imagining it, like I think that could be a really beautiful ritual,
yeah,
and moment for everyone there.
And aesthetically, Julie.
Yeah,
really nice. That's really cool.
Aesthetics too. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by 1010.
Now, you may have read about this in the New York Times, InStyle magazine, or Forbes, and we're excited to tell you about it.
1010 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today.
Using only diamonds responsibly sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful commitment ring. They're available now exclusively on BlueNile.com. And when they're gone, they're gone.
We all know that the diamond engagement ring is iconic. It's a timeless expression of the deepest commitment between two people. And with 1010, it's been beautifully re-envisioned in the hands of 10 modern designers working exclusively with sustainably sourced diamonds.
If you're on the hunt for the perfect, unique ring to wear forever, you definitely want to check this out.
Again, this exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings just launched, and you can find it exclusively at BlueNile.com.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many things that you can do, and I think it's really personal to each couple. And I think people can come up with these ideas on their own. I think it's really just a matter of thinking about how you want people to feel at any given moment. How do you want them to feel when they sit down to dinner? You know, do you want them to feel like they're all a big part of a family? Then you maybe want to do a family style meal. Mm-hmm. And so those decisions then become based more on the emotions you want to generate and less on maybe the logistics. Because yeah, sometimes we make these choices purely based on budget or whatever the venue recommends. But if we're making these choices based on how we want to make people feel, then it can create a lot of meaning for everyone there.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is such an amazing way to personalize the wedding to the couple, to really customize it to the couple, which is something that we talk about all the time because people spend so much money on weddings. And I think I might have told you this when you and I were on the phone, but like we had a listener comment to us how she was on our Facebook group actually, how they did it. You know, they're married and she's really happy they're married, but you know, she had the wedding, you know, she had that quote wedding, the big wedding. And she left kind of feeling a little, I guess maybe the opposite of what you're saying, and I'm sure that you probably kind of counsel couples on this, but she left kind of feeling like she did it all for the people that attended, as opposed to like what would have kind of filled her cup. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. And actually that's why the very first thing that I talk about with my clients is the first question that I ask is, what need does this wedding fulfill for you? Why do you want to have a wedding? Like, what is it that you want to get out of it? And I think we kind of skip that step because people think, oh, well, I want to have a wedding because I want to get married. But it's actually much deeper than that. You know, people want weddings for different reasons. They want to connect with their families. They want to, you know, throw a big party. And I think if you skip the step of really interrogating what is the most important thing about having a wedding, what need it fulfills for you in your life. I mean, this is a really, it's not just a party that you're throwing. It's a really big transitional moment in your lives. It fulfills a certain fundamental need in being human. And if we're not addressing that need, then yeah, I think at the end of it, you might end up feeling a little bit underwhelmed and like, okay, well, I just threw this big party. You know, I spent a ton of money to make sure everyone had a good time, but I don't feel this sense of fulfillment that I really fulfilled this purpose, with my wedding.
Which you certainly will feel when you feel, like you said, connected with those guests, those people who you love and are so important to you that you would invite them to such an amazing and special event and milestone in your life. Yeah.
You mentioned personalizing it. And I think also a lot of couples don't really know how to do that. And mm-hmm. So they think the only way to personalize a wedding is by choosing a color palette that they like and by how they design the details. But I think that the color palette, you know, is as much an expression of who you are as a couple as like the clothes you wear are an expression of who you are as a person. Like, it's just an expression of your taste and style. It's not who you are. And mm-hmm. so I think that we need to be going a little bit deeper with weddings and not just think about the color palette as a way to personalize it, but who are we? What do we value? What is important to us about our community? How can we show our community that they're important to us? How can we make them feel a part of this moment? And how can we make this wedding like really feel like nobody else could have had a wedding just like this? Because the reality is I've been to a ton of weddings, and the couples at these weddings were so diverse, so many different kinds of people from all over the world. And yet so many of the weddings felt so much alike. Mm-hmm. And to me, that says there's this kind of lack of true personalization. You know, maybe the details were different, the venues were different, but the weddings themselves, it was like, okay, this was another wedding. They started to feel a little bit the same to me. And so I think that we should be just really getting a little bit deeper in who we are as a couple and how we want to express that in our wedding. And I think that that gets down to how we interact with people, how we engage with people, how we make them feel.
How would someone begin to explore that? Let me tell you what I have told my clients, and you could actually correct me or give me some new terminology. But I always, the easiest way for me to kind of help them kind of extract who they are as a couple and how to incorporate that into the wedding. But I'm always talking about design aesthetic, right? But even in the food, you know, things like that is, you know, first, who are you as individuals? And then, you know, like kind of bring that together and who are you as a couple? Thinking about like, well, what's your favorite food? You know, have you guys gone on vacation together? What's the favorite? Where do you love to go? What's your favorite restaurant? Where do you go shopping? You know, what kind of furniture is in your house? What do you guys like to do when you're together? Just the two of you to pass the time. Do you ask these sort of questions to your clients to kind of extract some info to design these?
Yeah, absolutely. So I have a whole workbook. I mean, I don't like to call it a workbook because I don't want it to feel like work, but I have a guide, let's say, and it has a lot of questions like that. I mean, they're maybe a little bit deeper, but they get into,
deeper, like
together. Actually, one of my clients told me I'm like a therapist for weddings. Yes. Because I've sort of made her really interrogate these choices that we make and why are they important? Why do you want to have a big party? Why do you want to have a destination wedding? But some of the questions, I mean, like I said, the first question I ask is sort of what need does this fulfill? But also what need does it fulfill for your community? Like, how will your parents feel at the wedding? How will they, you know, your families and your friends, like what, this also serves a role for them. You know, I think one thing I really neglected at my own wedding was how important a day it was for my parents, you know, and which is to say, I know that people get really caught up in like feeling like, you know, mother of the bride, mother-in-law is pressuring me to make certain choices and decisions. And I'm not talking about that. I'm not saying we should kind of hand over the reins to other people necessarily, but I think we should be acknowledging like emotionally, it's a huge day for our parents. And how can we capitalize on that emotional moment? I just, you know, I think back to my own wedding and like looking at the ceremony, I looked out at the audience and my dad, my stepdad and my father-in-law were all just like blubbering like babies. And I was a little embarrassed for them at the moment. But when I look back, I just think, God, that's so beautiful. They were so moved. And I feel like I missed an opportunity to connect with them in some way in that moment by, I don't know, acknowledging them in the ceremony or something, or acknowledging them in some way, like really communicating to them how important they were and how important this moment was for us as a family and not just me and my husband as a couple. Mm-hmm. So I think we need to also think about how, you know, the things that we do reverberate out and touch other people's lives too. And so a lot of my questions are about that, about what our relationships are like with other people, the people that we want to be there? Why do we want them to be there? Why is it important that they're there? Who do we invite? I mean, I think that the guest list is probably one of the most critical things that you have to choose.
Yes.
Is who needs to be there and who needs to not be there.
Yes.
It's very hard to exclude people. There's a ton of pressure about who to invite. Mm-hmm. And I know that that's a really challenging part of the planning process, but it's an important part. And who is there and who is not there really shapes the community that's coming together and the vibe that's coming together. And, you know, sometimes who we exclude shapes the type of gathering more than anything else. Like if you, for example, you're having like a gathering of just women, the fact that men are excluded changes the dynamic than mm-hmm. if it was, you know, every person, you know, and not to say that you should have a gendered wedding, but that's just an example of how who's not there is almost as important as who is there. And I think it's, yeah. And I encourage couples to like really draw a line of who should be there and who's really needs to be there. And I think especially with the pandemic, that's something everyone's having to ask themselves now, you know, if they're having to cut down their guest list, people are really having to dive into who the most essential people in our lives are.
They really are. And it's, I feel like it's shaping things a bit with regard to this subject. We have a lot of people, even over the years, who have said like, I don't get along, you know, with my brother. Like, we have never gotten along. He has hurt me in a thousand ways. You know, I don't even have him over to my house. I'm really struggling with this. Like, I don't even want him at my wedding. And we're always like, if you need the permission from me, I'm down to say, don't invite him. You know, like, we don't choose our family. And that's hard. I mean, that's, I could never. Me personally, I love my brothers. We get along really well. Like, but it must be so difficult. And it is. It is difficult to make those decisions to say, or especially like if your partner is like, but that's like my best friend. And you're like, I hate him. He's an asshole. You know, it's just like, it's really, it is. It's one of the hardest for many couples. For some, it's easy. But for many couples, it's so difficult to create that guest list and really scale it down now with the pandemic, especially like, ooh, you know.
Yeah. So I start with finding the purpose of the wedding so that when you're really clear on that, you're clear on what need this fulfills for you, then it's so much easier to make those decisions because you have a guideline to kind of run every other decision through.
What do some people say to you that the need is that it's fulfilling for them?
I mean, like, I actually have a little wheel that helps people kind of home in on their purpose. But let me think of some of the examples, like to connect with your community, to connect with your families, to connect more deeply with each other, to share an experience with your friends and family, or to honor your parents or honor religious traditions. I mean, there's a lot of different ways, kind of core purposes that when you can figure out like what is the most, which one resonates most with you as a couple, then it really can help set the guidelines of who to invite and every other choice as well. Like if your purpose is, you know, we want to celebrate the future that we're building together, then, you know, maybe you don't want to invite, you know, you only want to invite people that are going to be a part of your future. Maybe you don't want to invite like your childhood friend that you never see anymore. Mm-hmm. But those kind of things help make the other decisions easier.
Going back to the parents, when you were talking about that earlier, something popped into my mind, you know, like on it's very important for your parents. Like there's a lot of pressure. There's all that. But we've been asked on several occasions, how to honor a parent at the wedding, like some ideas. As an example, a couple of times a bride has said, my dad is walking me down the aisle, you know, this is a great honor for him, but my mom's a huge part of my life and I'm traditional, like I want my dad to walk me down the aisle. what else can I, what can I do for my mom to honor her? Have you ever been asked this question?
Not specifically. When you first started asking it, I thought you were going to ask me about honoring dead relatives, which is something that I've also had to do.
Always. Yeah.
Yeah. And I have an answer for that as well, but
okay, good.
Talk about, living relatives. I think there are a lot of ways to really honor people. I mean, it can be something very personal. It can be a letter you write. I actually just saw on a photographer's blog recently that the couple wrote handwritten letters to every single person at the wedding, and they handed them out during the ceremony.
Whoa. I thought that was some
beautiful detail. And I mean, think about how meaningful that would be if you're, exactly.
I'm clenching my chest, you guys. I'm like, oh, that one got me. That one's awesome.
I thought that was beautiful. And I mean, I think that was the first thing that came to mind when you asked about honoring the mother, is something like that. Like, it could be really personal, and it can also be private. And it can also be a toast to the mother. I mean, it doesn't have to be some, you know, you don't have to reinvent the wheel. It really can just acknowledge, okay, I want to make my mother feel loved and appreciated at my wedding. How can I do that? I can toast to her. I can make everyone else toast to her. I can give her a gift that day privately before the ceremony. I can acknowledge her in the ceremony. I can have her do a reading at the ceremony. All of these different things are ways to kind of make one person feel special, or it can even create some kind of ritual. I mean, one of my favorite rituals at ceremonies is the Jewish tradition of the parents holding up the four corners of the chuppah. I think the symbolism of that is so beautiful, that the chuppah represents the house and the parents holding up the corners of it over the couple. I mean, that's obviously like a religious tradition, but you could create your own ritual at the ceremony that somehow acknowledges the parents. They hold something, they light a candle, something like that. It really depends on the individuals who are, you know, involved. As far as honoring dead relatives, which is also, I think, something people want to do. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think actually the biggest piece of advice that I give people is to not shy away from difficult emotions at weddings, that we're afraid to kind of bring down the mood. And I think that's why I get this question a lot, is because people are afraid to acknowledge death at a celebration of love. They don't want to bring the vibe down. You know, they want it to be this super happy day. But the thing is, emotions are like the richest experiences in our lives are usually made up of multiple emotions at once. And if you try to make your wedding day all happy, then it essentially creates this kind of baseline of, if there isn't an emotional journey of ups and downs, it ends up feeling very flat. And so I actually encourage people to leave space for difficult emotions, because it helps make the positive emotions feel bigger in a sense. I mean, in the way that grief can help us feel grateful to be alive, those difficult emotions like really amplify our positive emotions. But the thing that makes them sort of tolerable and not make everyone just kind of fall apart with sadness is to put a frame around it in some way. So create a moment where you acknowledge the person and then move on. Because I think one tradition that makes me very uncomfortable at weddings is where they have an empty chair for a relative. And that to me is the opposite of what I'm saying. It's like really, you know, it's not letting people kind of have this emotional journey where like you feel your sadness, you feel the grief, the loss of this person not being there. And then if you don't give them space to kind of bounce back and feel joy again, it's just this lingering discomfort of loss that kind of sits with you through the whole meal. So I think it's perfectly fine to kind of make space for grief at a wedding, but it has to be contained in a way. Like, this is the moment that we're going to acknowledge this loss. Everyone's allowed to feel sad right now. And now let's move on.
Yeah, I've done plenty of the empty chairs, or like grandpa's hat on the chair, or a framed photo of, you know, mom or some, I've had someone recently whose brother had passed away, and we put a framed photo of him over on a, we had like a vignette of furniture and a little side table, and his photo was there. And it was something that they passed, like that as the ceremony was happening for the processional, the bride and her two parents walked down the aisle, and they walked past his photo, and they kind of stopped and paused for a moment there and looked at him, which I loved. I loved that.
That to me is a frame because it's a moment.
Yeah. It was they talked about him a lot throughout the entire wedding, including during the ceremony, which I loved. I think right along the lines of what you're saying, like a lot of people are afraid to discuss it because they don't want people to get sad, but sadness is a part of life and you're celebrating a big part of life. And, you know, it's okay. Like you said, I love that, you know, give them permission or give them the space to be, to grieve for a moment or be sad. I mean, there's nothing wrong with that at all. And this happiest day of your life is bullshit anyway.
There's no such thing as an event that's like purely happy the entire time. But I think a lot of people hope for that. And I said, it actually makes for a boring event. Mm. You need to have ups and downs. It's actually also okay to have moments where nothing much is happening. And there are like maybe boring moments, because then what happens after the boring moment will feel more exciting.
Oh, yeah.
If you just have this kind of constant flow of things happening, it can actually feel really exhausting.
If it's constantly really great, everything's fun, everything's pretty. Yeah.
Then nothing's great. Right. You know,
is
you
it have though? To have space. Is it really great? No.
You need to have, you need to have ups and downs, and you need to take people on a journey. And things definitely feel better when, you know, I mean, think about how amazing it feels to get into bed at the end of a day when you're like so exhausted. Like the exhaustion almost becomes like pleasurable because you get to relieve yourself of it. It's the same thing with experiences. It's like if you're really bored, then like something happening feels really exciting. And
right.
So it's okay. It's okay to let people be bored. It's okay to have moments of like nothing really happening. And it's just okay. Like you don't have to entertain people the entire time.
Yes. I love it.
Please people the entire time or make them happy the entire time.
Well, exactly. Which is kind of nice because yes, the couple, they are hosting and they are the guests, and they can't like the whole, you know, the old school way of doing this, by the way, is the receiving line, right? The receiving line where everybody lines up and then they come by and they say, hello to the bride and groom. This is lovely, beautiful. And you're smiling and it hurts so bad because you can't stop smiling and you don't know what to say to everybody that's different than what you said to the person that was right before them and heard the whole conversation. Or where the bride and groom, or you know, I shouldn't say bride and groom so much. We try very hard not to do that. Where the couple walks around to each table, you know, at some point of the night, I want to go around to each table and I want to say hi to everybody and take, and that's a good photo op, which is nice. I mean, I think it's nice if you're able to do it. But then, you know, with a lot of my clients who have these big weddings, like that's the only time they really are able to engage with everybody. So you had talked about like how in the future there's going to be more opportunity on how to design around bringing people together. I literally wrote this down, and less focus on the other details or spectacles that used to get focused on, like the cake, for example.
I think there's going to be a shift. I mean, there's already been a shift happening in society that toward experiences beyond just services. Like we're really getting into more experiential, economy. And I think this is definitely going to trickle down into weddings, especially after the pandemic, where everyone is having to rethink what's essential. You know, this is kind of the key word right now, is what is essential. And it's the people, you know, it's people are willing to wait a couple years to have their wedding or have it on Zoom or have it smaller, as long as the people can be a part of it, because that's what really matters. And so in the past, it seemed like weddings were really designed around just the aesthetic details, and all of the money was put into the aesthetic details. I just think the entire world is sort of making a shift more toward this idea of what is really important to us and its relationships. I mean, having been kind of kept away from our, you know, most beloved friends and family for so long, all people really want is to just be with the people they love and celebrate and have those moments and relationships and interactions. And you realize too that, you know, 20 years down the line, when you're remembering the wedding, you're not going to remember what the cake looked like. No one is going to remember what the cake looked like. They're going to remember what the wedding felt like. And so that's what we should be designing it around.
Yeah. There's never been a time in my lifetime or in yours other than now where we really see and miss and understand how important it is to be with other people, right? How much we miss that connection. And when things get back to quote normal, which everybody keeps talking about and wants so badly, how what you're talking about, what we're talking about on this episode is going to be so important, far more than the aesthetic design, but rather, you know, really engaging with those people who you want around you on this day, on this evening. It's so important. And I think, you know, I've been planning weddings for 18 years, Julie, and this is like, I don't know that and maybe shame on me, but I don't know that I've really, until now, until this pandemic and, you know, really focused on this and said, like, I mean, I've always talked about the guest list and most important people, but really, like, how do we make sure to engage and make everybody feel part of things and make sure that you are engaging with these people in a meaningful way on the wedding day? It's just, it's kind of mind blowing.
I think that there's been kind of a failure in the wedding industry to really make weddings meaningful. I think that we've taken for granted that it will automatically be meaningful just because it's a wedding, just because it's a ceremony that's making a marriage happen. But without like actually putting intention and thought into how we're making meaning as a group, in my experience, it hasn't felt that way. I've just been to a lot of weddings that just, they felt like parties, you know, it was fun, but you walk away from it like, okay, that was nice.
I could have been at a club though, right? Like I could have been at it like a bar and, you know, not known anybody. And
well, yeah, I mean, like I was the wedding I was thinking about the other day where I felt like it wouldn't have mattered if I wasn't there. I mean, I hung out with my mom and my sisters and my boyfriend, who are people I see all the time. And like we could have hung out at home, you know, and saved the couple a lot of money. And I just think, why is that the case? Why aren't we putting more intention into the way that we are bringing people together? We could just be bringing people together in a more thoughtful, deliberate way and not just kind of leaving them to their own devices. It's a little unfair to just kind of, you know, leave it up to the guests to have to make their own meaning and create their own interactions and connections.
So I didn't ask you about this, but on our call, and I don't have this in our little rough outline, so I might be throwing you a real doozy here, but have you been asked by couples currently during this pandemic who are modifying their wedding? You know, for example, I'm doing virtual weddings for couples. Like I'm on the screen, I'm doing it from my home. I'm seeing the people who are, you know, on Zoom and making them feel part of the in-person, right? I'm trying to connect that, the people who are remote watching to the few people that are in person. Have you been asked to assist at all in this or give ideas or help with these type of things?
I haven't actually done any virtual weddings and none of my clients right now are planning anything virtual, which I'm a little relieved about, to be honest, because I don't know how to do what I do virtually. I've been thinking about this a lot. And so far, all of my clients have postponed their weddings rather than modify them to virtual, which I appreciate because again, like for me, the entire thing is around the people and bringing people together in a meaningful way. So okay. It would be really challenging for me to actually have to pivot to a virtual wedding. But I feel like I'm up to the challenge if anybody needs help in that regard. I think I could come up with some pretty creative ideas, but hopefully in the next couple of years, we'll be getting back to having large-ish in-person weddings again. And I think it'll be interesting too, to see the kind of lasting effects on big gatherings, because it's a little too soon to know the kind of long shadow that this will cast on events. I know that in some places, big events are still happening against better judgment, but you know, will we be creating more space? Like, will we be thinking about things spatially in a different way and making sure that there's a lot more space for people and those types of things? I think it'll be really interesting to kind of see which direction things go in, or if people are like, screw it, we want to be as close to everyone as possible. We haven't seen these people in so long. Like, let's just pack them into a tiny room and hope for the best. It'll be really interesting to see what happens.
For sure. And I do want to just note, you know, even if it's not a big wedding, even if it's a 50-person wedding or a 30-person wedding or a 20-person wedding, all of these experiential ideas should still be incorporated, because you're together with somebody and you want to make everybody feel included. No, I think it's wonderful. Now, before we end, I want you to talk about this kind of new offering you were telling me about, this design sprint, as you call it, because you're offering a discount to anyone listening right now.
Absolutely. So a design sprint is basically a collaboration between me and the couple, and they're actually welcome to invite anyone else on the call as well. I have a client I'm meeting with this weekend, and the bride's father is officiating, so he's going to jump on with us also, so we can talk about some ideas that he can bring into the ceremony. But it's a co-creative process where we get together, we go through, I ask a ton of questions. They get a workbook ahead of time where they can kind of go through and think about all of these things ahead of time. And then in the span of about 3 hours, which is really quick for a design process, that's why I call it a sprint, even though it sounds like a long time, it's actually really fast to think about all of these things. We go through the entire wedding experience from like the first moment anyone hears about it. So like when they get your save the date, all the way through until you're sending thank you notes. We go through the entire experience and find, we talk about what emotions you want people to feel at each stage. And then we find touch points of ways to create moments where we can generate those feelings. And we do the entire design process together. And then afterwards I send basically like a strategy plan where, you know, they can implement it in their wedding. They can hand it off to their coordinator if they have one. A lot of the stuff is just stuff that will, you know, that's sort of built into the timeline. Other stuff is stuff that the couple has to do. But they get like a whole plan and then have an experiential wedding.
This is awesome. So this is a way where anyone, anywhere in the world can connect with you and create this experiential design kind of plan for their own wedding.
Yeah, with me. And yes. I also offer a DIY version as well, because it is without a little expensive, but yeah, without me. But and they can, it's basically a workbook that they can go through and come up with their own ideas for how to build experience design into their wedding day.
And this is affordable. I mean, this is not like, I mean, what the DIY book, I know on its own is super affordable, and you're giving everybody kind of in written digitally, right?
It's printed.
It is printed. Mm-hmm. Oh, so this is so pretty. I'm looking on your website. I'm like, oh, it's such a pretty book. Kai, good for you. You are a good designer.
Thank you. And the Design Sprint clients, they also get the book as well, for them to go through. And, I just came out with this, and, a couple that I'm talking to this weekend, they went through it and had a couple glasses of wine, and she said it was a really fun experience just to go through the book together.
Oh, I love it.
Help them talk about, you know, their plans and what they really want out of their wedding. And I think, you know, it's a nice moment to connect for a couple to spend some time together and really talk through all of these things beyond just, you know, the aesthetic details and what, you know, what kind of bar to have and what kind of food to serve. It's getting a little bit deeper into like, what does this wedding really mean to us?
To do the design sprint with you, I mean, do you feel comfortable talking about the price of that? Is that okay?
Yeah, it's 985 euros.
Euros. Oh yeah, because you're in Germany.
Yeah, yeah.
So what is that in dollars?
It's about it's a little over $1,000.
Okay. For 3 hours plus the book, and they are getting a whole plan. I mean, basically at the end of this.
Absolutely. I mean, and then you have all of the experiences I am done for your wedding, all of these moments that we've talked about, all the different ways to like really make the experience of being at your wedding meaningful and magical for the people who are there.
But you're offering a discount for our listeners, isn't that right?
Yes, I am.
What is that discount?
A very exclusive 20% discount on either the design sprint or the DIY book if you use the code BIGWEDDING.
That's awesome. 20% is a good discount, everybody. So how do they take advantage? They go to your website.
Yeah, exactly. They can go to my website, cumberstudio.com, and there is a page for couples, and it will walk them through all of the options that I offer for couples.
I'll say that slower because you said it fast. It's cumberstudio.com, which I love that. It's comfort. I'm comfortable. I'm comforted. Cumberstudio.com. Check it out. And Julie, what's your Instagram handle?
It's Comfort Studio Berlin.
Berlin. That's so cool. Awesome. Well, this was like really great. I always say this, but it's so awesome doing this podcast because I'm just, I mean, look, you're in Berlin, girl. And you've just taught me a few things. So I really appreciate that. I'm grateful for that. And I think what you're doing, is so important and so wonderful. And like I said, when things start to go back to where we feel good gathering in big groups and having these big weddings again, this is so important. So, I mean, thank you for doing this. And I'm so happy that we're able to spread the word about this to our audience. And yeah.
Thank you so much.
Awesome. Thank you.
The Big Wedding Planning Podcast is hosted and produced by me, Christy Matthews, and Michelle Martinez. It is edited by Veronica Gruba. Music by Steph Altman of Mophonics. If you like the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, please subscribe. We are available for free on pretty much all podcast player apps. Help us get the word out by rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts.
Follow us on Instagram at the Big Wedding Planning Podcast and be sure to use the hashtag #PlanThatWedding when posting. Become part of our Facebook group. Join us and our amazing members. Just search the Big Wedding Planning Podcast community on Facebook. If you want to get in touch with us, you can email us at thebigweddingplanningpodcast@gmail.com or you can call and leave us a voicemail at 415-723-1625 and you might hear your voice on a future episode. That is it. Happy planning, everybody. Christy, love you, love your show.
Bye.